Nate Thurman and Al Addles joining us. Of course, Al coached the team, the Warriors. He's been a part of that organization for more than 50 years to an NBA championship. Nate, one of the all-time greats, Hall of Fame center. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, defense. Before I talk about Will Chamberlain, can you guys put into perspective what your attitudes were about playing defense in professional basketball? Because now we hear about the Matador defense sometimes with some teams where they just kind of wave when they run by them. I'll start with you, Nate.
Well, sitting to my right is one of the best defensive guards ever to play in the NBA, and I like to play defense at the center position. It was a thing where the defenses were not as sophisticated as they are now. We played more man-to-man, and I think it was a thing where you didn't want your guy to score 30 points on you. And I can remember him playing against Oscar. I can remember him playing against West. And, it was a night where he had to go to work. And the same with me when I was playing against Wilt or playing against Bellamy or playing against, I'm trying to think, the guy from Buffalo that's a coach now, 7-time NBA scoring champion, McAdoo. When I played against McAdoo, if I wasn't on my job, he was going to drop 40 on me. So you really had to take pride, that's the word I want to use, in what you were doing to stop your man. Because when I was in high school, my coach always said, this is the way I evaluate my players. If we played a strict man-to-man, if your man got 18 and you got 16, then you were -2. But if you got 12 and your man got 6, you were +6. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I was taught to play defense. So it was a pride thing, and I think that Al would agree that he didn't want Jerry to score 40 points, so he had to go to work.
Well, I used to, I jokingly say this, but I used to, meet Oscar at the airport, drive him to the hotel, made sure he got his sleep, made sure he got to the game on time, so he could get 35 off of me. I wanted to make sure he got his 35. I didn't want him to get 45. I wanted to get 35. But, I jokingly say this, but, you've been very fortunate to have played with centers who help. And there's one on my left who really, really would help you, because I can remember situations, one in particular, and I won't say who the player was. Fortunately, I didn't play with him, but I heard the story where he told his teammates, I'm not going to help you when your man gets by you. Nate was just the opposite. He would help and do anything he possibly could to help you, because he knew the problem that you were having with your opponent, so he would help you. But usually you'd go into those meetings and you'd say, okay, you have Oscar, you have Jerry, you have whoever it is. And, some people would say, we'll help when we can, but basically you have to play him. But on the same token, Nate had to play against Wilt, or he had to play against Russell, or he had to play against Bellamy. And, the centers were good back then, and they did great things, whereas now I don't think, because of the nature of the game, that the centers are a high priority on a lot of teams. But, it was a great time, and it was time that everybody, felt really, really good about going into each game. And, there were some outstanding rivalries, I think, back then.
It's always very interesting for me to take a look at somebody that was a great player and try to understand what was reality and what was perception and what was myth. And you and I were talking about Wilt. You played with him as well, because he was already with the Warriors when you got drafted and brought in. And I'd like you both to address the perception and the reality of Wilt Chamberlain, not only as a player, but also as a man.
Well, I'll start with him. I played with him for 4 or 5 years, but I knew him beyond the basketball court. I remember I was a recreation teacher in Newark, and one day I'm sitting in the playground, and the youngsters are coming around talking. They run over. They said, "Hey, Mr. Addles, there's a big, tall guy outside waiting. He's coming into the playground." I said, "Really? Who is he?" He said, "We think he's Will Chamberlain." And I went outside. And he came over to the playground with a fellow named Carl Green, who had played with the Globetrotters with him, and another player. And they came and they were kind of playing in the playground where I was working. Now, why do I tell a story like this? Because when you tell people things like that, they have a hard time believing it because of the scale that they put people on. You know, Nate is the same way that when you tell people how gracious he was in doing things, and everybody say, really, really? He said, you know, all you have to do is look at what he's done in his totality rather than what he did just on a basketball court. And that's why, you know, it's been great, you know, as far as I'm concerned, to be connected with those kinds of people.
He had a graciousness about him, but as one big man to another, tell me about him a little bit.
Well, he was gracious. Let me put it this way. Wilt could have, he scored 50 a game one season. And if he had to had the mentality of a Shaq, he could have scored 70 a game.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't want to use his height to his advantage as much as he could, or his strength, which was beyond anybody in the league in both areas. As a person, he was as kind a guy as you want to meet, and he wasn't hung up on the fact that he was Wilt Chamberlain or the centerpiece of the whole league. And to me, you know, he treated me with respect and tried to tell me when he got traded, the reason why he was traded, and to be careful and try to get as much money as you could, because that's what it was about, and I appreciated that. It was, the myth was the fact that when he passed away, I just couldn't believe it when somebody called me and said, Wilt was dead. Because Al and I saw him or heard about him or knew about things like him driving from Philadelphia to San Francisco without stopping. After a game, he would get somebody to go to the store. He guzzled down a half a gallon of milk. And we knew that he could carouse a little bit at night and come in the next day and still get 55. Yeah. So he was superhuman in that respect. But when you chipped all that away, my first hoagie was with Al, Guy Rogers, Wilt and Wayne Hightower. Wilt took us to his favorite hoagie place, bought all of us hoagies, paid for it, left a nice tip. Many times at breakfast at Pam Pam's, I'd run into him, he'd grab the check. I mean, he was a really genuine person if he knew you. Now, the other part of him, he had to be a little standoffish to people who didn't know him because everybody wanted a piece of him.
Do you feel that you both, given the contributions that you've made to professional basketball, both collectively on the teams you played on, and the fact individually, as goodwill ambassadors for the sport, there's no doubt about it, that you're appreciated by today's ball players? Because I know someone once told me that if you asked African-American baseball players, probably a majority of them couldn't tell you, they wouldn't be able to tell you who Hank Aaron was.
Well, I think there's a little bit of that, but you know, I don't begrudge the guys because of it, because they're really in a market where they're competing with a lot of other people. And you'll be surprised the number of them, when they see you in a setting, they'll acknowledge the fact that they appreciate what you've done. But I've always said, you don't do it for people to say they appreciate you. You do it because it was something that you enjoyed doing. And if people determine that you moved it along to where they are now, that's fine. But I don't think you do it for that reason. You do it because you enjoyed it when you played. You had fun. I can remember Don Barksdale. Who is from this Bay, from the Bay Area, who I got to know very, very well and got to be involved with him with some things. But I remember, you know, watching him on a small TV in New Jersey, and I said, you know, boy, he's a terrific player. Never did I, in my wildest imagination, did I think I would ever meet him or that I would ever play in the NBA. So, you know, I think that, you know, if players acknowledge that you've done some things that they appreciate, I think that's great, but I don't think you look for it.
Yeah, I think that there are some players who are historians, let's say that. They were mentioning that today about LeBron. But your average player today doesn't really, I don't think, go into the history of that. And I don't think badly of them because of that. They have a lot of things that are happening. We haven't mentioned, we said, how many changes in the league. Well, how many changes that a particular star will have in his life? All the interviews, all the different contracts that he may or may not have to sign, all the endorsements. being in Europe during the summer, doing this and doing that. So, I mean, it's a different type of lifestyle for that player that he may not or care to look back in the history of the NBA. And that's, I have no problem with that because I understand the totality of what they're doing today. Mm-hmm. But I admire them for what they're doing. And I'm happy for them for all the things that they can become involved in. And when we're talking about that, probably the guy that I admire the most is Magic Johnson, being what he has become as far as a business person. And I think there are a lot of players in the NBA who would be well served to know what he has done. Mm-hmm. And there's some others too, don't get me wrong. But Magic stands out far and above anybody that I know about.
You know, when I think of baseball, obviously Jackie Robinson opened the door for other African Americans, and they had their impact on baseball. Fritz Pollard comes to mind when I think about the NFL. But when I look at you gentlemen and Earl Cooper and others like you, collectively, I don't believe there is any other sport that African Americans changed the game as much or contributed to making what this game is today than what you all did collectively. Is that a fair statement for me to say?
Well, I think it's fair, but I always look at people who came before me, Don Barksdale, Sweetwater Clifton.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm also right, yeah, thinking of yeah, before, pre.
And what happened was, you know, back when I came into the league, there were only 8 teams in the league. And what happened is, you know, if you got an opportunity, they generally drafted people from the bigger schools because the NBA wasn't nearly like it is now. So, you know, they had to really, really focus on selling the product, and they sold it based on different schools that you went to or wherever, or, you know, there were only 4 African Americans per play for a team when I got in the league, and there was only 3 before that. So, but having said that, your concern was that you did the best you can do under the circumstance, and you hope that it got better. It has gotten much, much better, and I'm glad that the players understand. And the one problem I have today is that the general population sometimes will see a player who does something that maybe is not right. And they'll look at the whole group and say, they all do that. And I'm here to say that that's absolutely wrong. That's absolutely false, because they have some outstanding young people in this league today. Nate mentioned an outstanding player who does a great job both on the floor and off the floor. And I think that we need to continue along this line, because the legacy that was built for you, you have to think about those who come behind you.
We got about a minute left. Go ahead, Nate.
Well, I think to address that a little further, we have an outstanding group of players with the current Warriors. There's no question about it. I mean, I think that we drafted well athletically, but I also think that there was a big thought about the person that we're getting. A Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Harrison Barnes, Azili. These guys have character coming in, and you can see that. Curry, just the way they handle themselves. Then you add to that a guy like Jared Jack. You add to that a David Lee. And being around them just a little bit that I'm around them, you can see that the Warriors not only want talent, but they want a certain type of player to build around, because they want a certain image, and I think they're doing a great job with that.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you not only for being in here and talking about the era that you played basketball, but for your friendship over the years. I've known both of you for a long, long time, and every time I've had you in the studio and we've talked not only about basketball, but about life in general. I still remember some of the stories you told me about your mom and how you got into the barbecue, and that recipe is squirreled away someplace, I know, Nate. Yeah. But I want to thank you for all that you have done for others as well. Thank you very much for coming in, Al Attles.
I just want to say thank you for being a friend all these years, and the great job that you do, just continue doing.
And Nate, you too have been very, very kind to me. Thank you.
Oh, well, hey, you've been kind to us, and we always have great interviews with you, and happy travels to you.
Thank you. So Nate Thurman, the Hall of Fame center with us, and, of course, Al Attles, former NBA player, coach, and general manager. We continue across the country and around the world on Sports Byline.